This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome back, Joy listeners. Yes, here it is, Escape Pod. We're launching into the end of the year. Welcome to Escape Pod and Joy 94.9. Escape Pod is Joe-free today, or Joe-less, or un-Joed, whichever way you want to put it. Joe is currently travelling about and enjoying Christmas with her family, so we give her a big radio hug. Thank you, Joe, for everything you've done this year. And we've got a lot of exciting things coming up over summer. Some people are travelling, some people aren't. Unfortunately, in the United States, there have been a lot of people smacked around by the wind, which has caused an untold damage. And apparently, four people have lost their lives. So we're very sad to hear about that in the southern US. Christmas tornadoes tearing things up. It reminds us of Cyclone Tracy. So Australia does have a lot of sad memories of awful things that have happened weather-wise over Christmas, and our thoughts go out to those people in the south of the US. There's not a lot of travel news, and the UK is currently going through some really shocking weather at the moment, so our thoughts are with our cousins in the UK, and we hope that they're all travelling okay and getting around. And if you are in the UK, you can actually stay at Downton Abbey. Those houses are not cheap to run, and they're not full of IKEA furniture, so it's more than an Allen key to run the joint. So not only filming, but they've been taking tours through the place, but now you can stay at Downton Abbey. So that's something that many of us might need to consider for the new year resolutions, of which I have very few because I break them every year. Today on Escape Pod, we welcome Emma Overton. Emma Overton has been a air hostess for a number of years. She worked very much so with the FIFO workers, fly in, fly out. And now her work has her travelling mostly to Europe as well as sometimes Asia. Emma, welcome to Escape Pod on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. How did you get into the travel business? How did you start off as a flight attendant? You were quite young, weren't you?
I was young, and I guess it was the beginning of my love of travel. I was a a country girl from Lamoureux, South Australia. And
tell us where that is.
It's near Pinneroo.
And where's that?
Not near Oruro.
Okay.
Yeah. So what happened with me is that I moved to Perth basically through circumstance, and a lot of the people that I was socialising with were involved in the airline industry. My partner at the time was an aircraft engineer. And so I studied travel and tourism at Adelaide TAFE.
Okay, so you were taking this very seriously as a young person. So what does travel and tourism study mean at that time?
Well, it was actually quite new. And, you know, it was, I think Australia kind of just realised how interesting it was. And so they started developing education programs around the industry. And so I guess I was one of those people who didn't really know what I wanted to be, but I knew I was interested in travel. And so I kind of, you know, followed that path. And so
it's been your whole career that you've been either involved in satellite around travel, or travel's been a big part of.
Yeah, and not on purpose. Okay, so I kind of stumbled across it, which, you know, I mean, I think you're blessed if you know what you want to be, you know.
I'm a big boy now and I still don't.
No, but my life process has been, you know, just following my feeling really in what I do for my work. So, so we moved to Perth, which was a big thing. I think I was 19 at the time. And obviously that was a big decision to make at that young age. And my background had actually been in rental cars. So I worked at the Adelaide Airport for Budget Rent-A-Car. So I'd loved the energy that airports offer. I love, you know, seeing people travel and come home, and, you know, the emotional side to travel, I guess, resonated with me.
Oh, there's a great saying about that. There are more No, go on. I'll find the saying.
So anyhow, all of my friends were either flight attendants or, you know, pilots or engineers, or and we happened to be at a Christmas party, and I thought, you know what, these guys have a lot of fun. This industry is fun. And I was currently working at the South Australian Travel Centre in Perth. That's the job that I got. But of course, it was, you know, business hours, 9 to 5, and a lot of my friends had a lot of time off and were working shift work, and I just saw that they had more opportunity. You know, they had opportunity to have fun, and I was young, and so I basically introduced myself at the Christmas party to the owner of the airline and said that I pretty much thought I should be a flight attendant for him, and that was the interview, and so Emma became a flight attendant.
So what was your first impression of becoming a flight attendant? Because it was a little while ago. I'm not going to give away your age, but things were a bit different. This is before September 11.
So I guess it was, you know, a highly prized job. You know, it was something as a
prestigious.
Young... Prestigious. And, you know, it gave opportunity, you know. It was well
uniform.
Paid. Well paid. You got to look pretty.
Yeah.
You know.
And you got to point at things.
That's right. And you had benefits like staff travel. And so if you do, you know, most people who go into the airline industry do because they love travel.
Mm.
So it offers that to you, you know. So, and that's what I saw. That's what resonated with me. So... So when I began and I was living in Perth, the company that I worked for had just basically won a lot of contracts for the FIFO projects, which obviously that's when Perth started
booming. Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about FIFO later.
Yeah, right.
So
that's when I kind of that was the start of the flying. So it was all based on flying. I was my own flight attendant. I was on a little Dash 8, so a little prop plane, and I had 36 seats, and I was basically taking the workers to and from work, which I loved. It was personal. I was their
people
only
rocking up in high vis.
Yeah, I was their only flight attendant. So we did everything back then. So I would check my own passengers in. I would load, you know, the bags would go out. I'd often actually help the pilots take the bags out to the plane. You know, it was very hands on. I'd load my own catering. You know, so it was, you know, powerful for me because it's kind of my little personal operation, you know. And so from that, the position grew because they won more contracts and they were needing more staff. And so from that, I kind of moved into training. So I started training the flight attendants coming on board.
How do you think flight attendant, the business has changed over the last X amount of years since you were training people to how you see them work today?
Well, I think it's more defined. So your role as a flight attendant is purely that of, safety, safety first and foremost. That's not to say that was always what it was, but your role is just purely, you know, you don't go through the check-in process. You know, it's not. You don't have to do... It's not as broad, I guess,
right,
is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, so...
Is that a big outcome of what happened at September 11, how the world changed and how the business changed following that? Because we all have to, you know, someone took on a shoe bomb, so we all have to take off our shoes now. So security is a very different proposition to what it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I can't... it was a while back now, so I'm trying to remember what the security was, but it's certainly way more relaxed. I mean, I don't think in some of our flights there was security checks, you know, because it wasn't mainline flying.
Yeah.
But however, you know, you're still running out of an
Perth.
Yeah, that's right, a big airport. So, but yeah, I guess that's been the major change.
And how has the recruitment process changed, do you think? Are people looking for different qualities in people, or is it still the same qualities but they're trained on and their focus in the work is slightly different?
No, I think, you know, to be a good air hostess, you know, you just need to be wanting to give
cabin crew.
I don't think they use that word anymore.
No.
Yeah. Cabin crew. Yeah, I think it's just about customer service. It's about, you know,
safety first,
understanding people, understanding their needs and meeting them.
Mm.
basically. Yeah.
Would you go back to flying?
I sometimes miss it.
Because you have a lot of friends who fly still.
I do. They still fly. And we met back in the day. And, you know, I wasn't the girl that always wanted to be the flight attendant, but I know many of my friends, that was their burning ambition. You know, they wanted to fly.
They still do.
Mm. And, you know, and
well,
I think that comes...
Out.
Yeah. My Wenos and Donzi and...
Yeah, people still flying and still loving every second of it.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, a lot of my friends are with Qantas and Virgin, and it really is about... meeting the customer's needs, you know, and they are service oriented people, and that comes through, I think, when you fly.
It's such a capital intensive business. It's such a huge undertaking, and it's so hard to make money. So the competitive advantage has got to lie somewhere. It's got to be
right.
in the value that the
flying service.
Public
gets. Absolutely,
yeah, in the service.
Yeah.
Mm.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Today, Escape Pod is talking to Emma Overton. Emma Overton is someone who has flown as part of her career and travelled around in her later career. Now, Emma, we were talking about FIFO workers before. It's a really interesting Australian phenomenon. Well, it's not just Australian, but something that's quite big here. You were talking about the early days of Western Australia and how Perth became the hub for people working in Karratha and all these other places where they had to fly in and fly out for work. So tell us about the nature of that work and how that was different to other hostessing experiences, because they were pretty contract-based kind of...
Absolutely. And for me, it was... I mean, I enjoy people, and for me, the flying was really rewarding because I knew all of my passengers personally. So, you know, it was like a close little community when I started flying.
Would you have been quite familiar with their schedules? Did you see them coming and
absolutely.
Going?
Absolutely. So, you know,
how long were the flights?
Some were 1 hour. Some they were, you know, quite quick. Some were 2 hours. You know, it depends. We went up to Telfer to the gold mines. We went, you know, into WA. So they were varied. Because the company that I worked for did a lot of charter flying as well. So it wasn't just FIFO, but we also did a lot of charter work. For example, when we started getting a lot of illegal immigrants coming through, we basically...
Unauthorised?
We did, charter work for Coast Watch Australia. So there were often times where we would have to charter a plane back to China and return the immigrants. So the flying was broad and varied. We did some... charter flying from Singapore to Christmas Island.
Were these also workers or?
No, these were for gambling junkets.
Ah.
So, yeah, really broad. We also did some immigrant work from Christmas Island as well. So I guess I enjoyed the variety of the flying.
They weren't big birds,
so a lot of the was smaller aircraft.
But there must have been challenging flights looking at the...
Really challenging,
whatever your politics are, it's just watching those people go through that experience.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. It's and you know, being met by the military on the ground in China, and you know, it to see that kind of thing is confronting.
Very.
But you know, also rewarding, I guess. Yeah. To learn those, to know that the world, you know, these things happen, and to educate yourself
and see how it works. Okay, interesting challenge. I would not have thought in a cabin crew's life that would be something that you deal with, but that's the way the world works, I guess.
Yeah.
So what were the most rewarding things you found from being a cabin crew? I mean, the long-term relationships and the friendships you've built up with people, I think, would have to be.
Absolutely.
Because you're such a team.
You are. And I don't know what sets you apart when you fly, but it is it's an unspoken understanding, I guess, you know, and it does carry through. It's a different career. And I guess you see that, you know, a lot. You know, you see the pilots and the flight attendants end up marrying because, you know, you have to understand the culture of the shift work, the nature that, you know, as much as you're away,
right,
you know, you are home.
Course.
So to have relationships is challenging also, especially if you're with a partner who is on the ground all the time, you know. So you've got the jet lag to deal with, you know, the time zone changes, So I think
so
that's
is it
why
really common that people end up shacking up with other people?
Absolutely. A lot of pilots and flight attendants end up in relationships.
Like doctors
for sure.
and nurses.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, and teachers and, you know.
Of course, yeah. Architects.
Yeah. But, you know, and hospitality would know this as well. If you work in hospitality, you know, to have the understanding of the shift work mentality helps. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you go back to flying? I've asked you this before.
Yeah.
Would you do it?
Probably not, because my journey has kind of
gone elsewhere,
yeah. Mm. But, you know, it is exciting. It's an exciting career, especially if, you know, you come from a travel kind of place, you know. That sounds weird, but yeah.
Well, your current working life takes you abroad a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So does that fill that gap?
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, we all design our own lives and, you know, travel inspires me. So it has shaped, you know, the way my career has gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my business takes me overseas quite a bit. I'm in furniture, so, you know, I try and when I do travel for business, I also, you know, tack on as much time as I can to, you know, if I go to, you know, France, make sure that I can have at least, you know, 7 to 10 days so that I can see, you know, the place while I'm there as well. So it gives me the opportunity to do that.
Mm. Okay, so where do you go? Is it the same place all the time? Are you?
Well, the two major furniture fairs. I mean, they're all around the world, but the biggest furniture fair that is in the world is the Milan Furniture Fair.
So people are coming in from all over the world.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you want to see furniture, that's the place to go.
So give us an idea of the scope.
It's huge. So there's basically an.
It takes over Milan.
Yes. Yeah, and it's all, you know, it's all about design and furniture. It's like fashion week for furniture.
Right.
Yeah. So it's really exciting. Obviously, there's new products always being launched.
And then there's the classic design and...
Yeah.
Surely the most encompassed
right.
architects and designers and, you know, huge...
Yeah. Broad. Yeah.
Broad. So manufacturers.
This year I went to... I didn't do Milan this year, but I went to Maison & Objet, which is run in Paris.
Right.
Again, it's slightly smaller than what happens in Milan, but you know, I basically wanted I'd done Italy for a couple of years running, so like I said, I try and incorporate my personal travel into my business. So I hadn't ever been to France and travelled through France, and I always travel with my longest, dearest friend that we met flying. So she always does cabin crew. That's right.
Yeah.
So she loves coming to the fairs with me, and so we make it our little yearly jaunt. You know, we pop over to Europe or wherever. You know, we want to go,
Milan
basically.
Or Paris. Yeah. So you're not doing it hard.
No, yeah. So this year was pretty special because I obviously hadn't experienced France before.
So what was your first impression of France? How did France grab your attention?
It's so beautiful. It's so diverse. And, you know, I mean, we're spoiled in Australia. We have a very diverse country as well, and there's beauty everywhere. But the architecture, and you know, we don't have old buildings. You know, I mean, we went through you know, Dordogne region, which has basically got some amazing, you know, from the 1500s, some castles,
early Roman.
So just to be in a space like that, and you feel like you could have been there, you know. It's really quite amazing. I mean, we came at the end of summer, and the vast greenery and the beauty, you know, it's like we don't see, our summers are harsh, you know, and everything is dry at the end. So we just couldn't believe how green and luscious everything still was after.
So you lobbed up in Paris, you did your work, and then so where'd you go? Take us through the trip.
So we spent our first couple of days in Paris, just familiarising ourselves, and that wasn't work to begin with. But, you know, we did the all the things that you need to do, the Moulin Rouge, the typical, the Luxembourg Gardens.
Oh, okay, you know, beautiful. So all the classics.
All the classics.
Paris classics.
Hit the ground running.
Because you took your mum, didn't you?
Absolutely. So, you know, I had to prep her for all of the walking. Of course, you know, that's how you see a city. You put your sneakers on and you just walk and walk and walk and walk. And so a couple of days in Paris, which was beautiful. And then we basically trained down to Bordeaux, and we were lucky enough to have the use of a family member of Christine's, my girlfriend's apartment in Bordeaux. So
we're going to talk more about that and staying in someone else's home just after the break.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
An escape pod today is joyless. Jo is waving with her family and having a wonderful Christmas break, so we wave back. And today we have Emma Overton. Emma Overton has been a former flight attendant. She worked as cabin crew for a number of years, also went into training, and is a bit of a global gadabout with her work and so forth. She gets to travel. We were just talking before the break about Emma's beautiful trip to France, which happened just a couple of months ago. She was there with her mum and some other friends, and we were talking about Paris and how amazing it is. What were your number one Paris things? They don't have to be museums or anything. They could be just experiences or moments.
We went to recently, at the beginning of the year, I travelled to Bali with my best friend Mark Adams.
Oh, who's that?
You're listening to him now. And we had a lovely little 7-day holiday in Bali. And if anyone's travelled to Bali, you know, Motel Mexicola.
Yes.
So we frequented that venue. And
we met a friend.
We met a lovely French girl. It was quite a brief meeting, but we became Facebook friends straight away. And so we had kept in contact, and she knew, we discussed that I was travelling to France later in the year, and she worked in hospitality and worked in a beautiful restaurant. So we basically said, "Well, we'll come and meet you." And so we went to the restaurant that she worked at, which for some reason I've forgotten the name.
It doesn't matter. McDonald's, doesn't
it? Yeah. No, it was beautiful. So for me, the work that I do now, a lot of it is focused on high end restaurant fit outs. Mm-hmm. So I'm always interested in going to beautiful spaces,
built environments.
Absolutely, that involve amazing food. I'm a bit of a foodie, so
yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, and the French rosé. Well, we know how good that goes down on a sunny afternoon. So we met with her, and we had an amazing dining experience. And then we popped off to the Moulin Rouge, and it was just a brilliant sort of kickstart to my French experience.
Mm.
Yeah, so that was a highlight. There were a lot. I can't kind of recall all of them now, but
no, that's fine.
Yeah, it was all.
So Paris, you did it well. You went to a fine dining restaurant.
Absolutely.
With someone that you knew, although not hugely, but that makes it a very personal thing too.
Yes, yeah. It was an early sitting because we had to go to the show at the Moulin Rouge, so we were actually the only diners, so we had their full attention, which was wonderful. So that was one of the great experiences.
And the French do know how to put a meal
they
together.
Do, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So you're talking about also your friend's friend. Who was at the apartment?
I remember the name. It's La Société.
Oh, that's right.
So if you're ever in France,
go knock
tag up. Yourself in there.
Facebook check in, walk away.
She may even be listening.
Yeah,
all the Stephanie, way over in Stephanie. Yeah.
Beautiful woman, beautiful tattoo.
She's
a striking.
She's a piece
woman.
Of art.
She's a living piece of art. She's a wonderful woman, and we enjoy her company very much. But you were talking about going further to an apartment which is owned by an Australian.
Absolutely,
contact?
Yeah. Family connection of the friend that I was travelling with, and they
he and his partner,
and they I think they are Melbourne based. So they offered their apartment for us to stay in, which was an amazing experience. So pretty much in the heart of Bordeaux.
Where is Bordeaux compared to Paris?
Bordeaux is about a 3.5 hour train. We trained down. Mm. I'm not very
south.
Good. Yeah, south. South of south. And so it's the wine region, basically. Mm. We went to an amazing winery, the Sauterre, by memory. Yeah, I'd have to check my Facebook image of the name. It was one of the most stunning vineyards I've ever seen in my life, and I have seen a few. That experience
coming
was
from South Australia yourself. You're certainly not a foreigner to a vineyard.
And so that was in the town of what town was that one? I can't recall.
Make it up.
So yeah, but then we went on from there, and we drove through the amazing Dordogne region, which. We'll go. I mean, I can't wait to go back.
So, what was so amazing about it? Give us
the scenery. You know, the architecture, the castles in the mountainside, the river running through. It's absolute beyond picture postcard. You have to see it to believe it.
Right. But everything in the Dordogne.
Yeah, everything in the Dordogne region. Bordeaux, amazing. The city of Bordeaux was. I think the people there were more beautiful than Paris, which is hard.
Just physically beautiful.
They're all beautiful, but they got more beautiful. to the point where you just go, everyone here is beautiful. Everyone is out of a catalogue. Our jaws were dropping 24 sevs. Yeah. So.
Oh, how lovely.
I cannot rave highly enough about. And so I can't wait to go back, you know. So basically, just for everything, just
for the beauty,
sick
of the beauty,
absolutely.
Yeah. So you stayed there, and you bumped into some other Australians, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
So we're everywhere.
Yeah, and you know you can pick our accent a mile away, so it doesn't, and we all get very excited when we meet each other, don't we?
Yeah, look, you're from my street. Let's
absolutely
talk to each other.
For some reason, we all seem to be related at the end of the conversation somehow, or have lived in Lamoureux or Pinneroo. So yeah,
interesting. Yeah. It's a small world.
That's what travel. That's what travel really shows, you know, opens you to, is that we are all the same. We are 5 degrees of separation, and that's the beauty, you know. That's the beauty of it.
Okay, so you're with your friend and your mum, and you were travelling around France. Where after the Dordogne? Was that the whole thing that would pretty much summed it up, or were you going further afield?
Pretty much, you know, Bordeaux, travelling up through the Dordogne region, Salat. We stayed in an amazing chalet, and then we drove again back up to Paris and did another couple of days in the city, and that's when I did the furniture fair. And then my mum, lucky her, went off and did another 3.5 week cruise around the Mediterranean. So unfortunately I didn't have the time to sort of tack that on the end. The friends I was travelling with, luckily enough, went down and spent some time in Nice and Cannes, and so I went. You know, I did my work bit, and then came home, and reality sets.
And so, the year before, you were in Italy, weren't you?
So it was the year before I did Milan. Mm. Yes. So again,
did you get
I travelled.
To take on? Yeah.
Yeah. So not as long. I travelled again with Chrissy, my girlfriend, and we pick where we want to kind of go each time. And the first time we did the Milan fair, we then went up through. Florence, Firenze, and all Siena, and all of that beautiful countryside. So this time, we decided we would try Cinque Terre, the five towns.
Yes.
And I always like to incorporate a bit of exercise in my travel. So we decided we decided to do an amazing hike from town to town. Which it was no mean feat, you know. We were puffing and panting, but it was amazing. So we basically.
How steep is it? How many
very
steps?
Very steep. It was, you know.
Did you need to be really fit to do this?
You did need to be really fit, and you know they give you a guide, but I think, you need to be really fit. You know, it's quite demanding.
Yeah.
So my recommendation for anyone when they do travel through Europe is really check the guides and make sure you're doing appropriate, you know,
preparation.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
would you advise people before they did some Cinque Terre to really smash their fitness before they go? Or
I mean, it absolutely always helps. You know, I do a lot of walking. You know, there's in Adelaide we all do the Mount Lofty, the Waterfall Gully Walk, which is a demanding 8 kilometre up and down trek, and it's a similar experience to the Cinque Terre hike because it's very picturesque and beautiful, but challenging. So yeah, absolutely. If you can get your walking up and just general fitness is always handy. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
So what would you advise people to do to prepare that morning? They do their stretches, they do their yoga, they put on their fanny pack. What would you for that particular thing?
Just have a nice breakfast.
Isn't that your advice for everything?
I mean, I love the hard-boiled eggs when I travel, I must admit.
You want to be walking in front of you then.
No, I'm generally a poached egg girl, but for some reason when I travel, I love a hard-boiled one. And I recall us sharing some hard-boiled eggs in Café de Luxembourg, Mark, in Amsterdam.
Yes, we did.
We had our boiled eggs of a morning before we'd hit the streets. So
travelling Amsterdam.
Yes, I think always never do anything on an empty stomach is my advice. A green juice if you can.
Right,
if not, an egg.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Now, today we're talking to Emma Overton, a former flight cabin crew and a person who travels a lot for work. Emma was talking about France and now she's talking about Italy. What was your number one impression of Italy? Because you're in Milan, northern Italy. What struck you the most?
The food, the people. The people are lots of fun. The Italians know how to have fun. You know, I mean, we were travelling and it was apparently a recession. You wouldn't know. People are out, they're eating, they're drinking.
Smashing it.
They're just, you know, they are a fun culture. And
Italy, yeah, absolutely. I think Italians are renowned for the joie de vivre.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or joyo de vivo.
Yeah. I think that's the French.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, talking about the French, Daryl has just SMS'd in. Thank you, Daryl. Daryl writes, Le Train Bleu at Gare de Lyon station is a must-see and it's one of the most expensive and exclusive and fantastic eating experience. I think that's one of the things about Europe, and I think Daryl is obviously a foodie and a food lover, as are we all. You were just talking about Italy and food. One of the things about Europe, wherever you go, the food culture is very different. We're a bowerbird here in Australia. We pull it in from everywhere. But when you go to different places, they might not have the breadth that we do, but the depth in stuff. So what was your the eating your way around Italy, what was your number one thing?
I mean I am a mad seafood person. So
and Italy's surrounded by water,
absolutely. And you know, so seafood basically, you know, we just through Cinque Terre
smashed
and our
it.
Time there was all basically amazing. You know, white anchovies, you know, I love a bit of salt and a bit of bread. Fish and salt and bread, basically. So just, you know, do that in as many ways as you possibly can, and I'm a happy girl. For me, I love the white wines in Italy. I'm very partial to a Pinot Grigio. You know, we didn't get a bad wine in France or Italy. You know, we're spoiled in Australia, I think.
But the cost, you said the cost was the real interesting
really
difference.
Reasonable.
Yeah,
really reasonable. I mean, you know, we were drinking a beautiful French rosé yesterday afternoon in Adelaide and, you know, I think it was 30 Australian dollars and we were paying usually around sort of €5 to €10 in France for a really, really high grade rosé, you know, and Italy. It was a while ago. I can't recall, but again, I think very reasonable, kind of similar around the sort of €10, and you get a beautiful, beautiful bottle of wine. So,
which goes with a beautiful food, and
absolutely,
it's
a foodie experience for sure. And that's, you know, that shapes my travel as well. You know, my love of my love of food. And
so how bring you're a very, very seasoned traveler. How do you like to travel? What's your ideal? Money no object. You were traveling. What would you do?
I like seeing countries by foot. You know, I like a lot of walking, and I like that. You know, that's how I like to travel. I like to incorporate my
Shanks
fitness.
Pony.
Incorporate my fitness. So, you know, I'm eating all of that cheese and drinking all of that wine. You know, I need to do at least an 8 to 15 k on the walking track to sort of compensate that kind of consumption. So, that's what I do.
But it's not even walking for you. You're a big yoga aficionado.
Yes. Well, I rekindled my love of yoga in Bali earlier this year. Mm. So we were fortunate.
Last New Year's resolution, New Year's, I remember, over a downward dog.
I recall
perspiring some grey goose.
New Year's Day, we were downward dogging at around 7:30 in the morning. So we went to a lovely yoga shala in Seminyak called the Seminyak Yoga Shala.
Unsurprisingly.
We had beautiful teachers and
except for one.
We did yoga every day, basically, bar one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
We did five sets of yoga.
The two women who are the teachers, they were just fabulous people.
Yeah. And, you know, they're teachers from all around the world. Mm. The one English lady we had teaches basically Bali and then 6 months in Byron.
She's Australian now. She's migrated. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, that rekindled my love of yoga, and I'm lucky enough in Adelaide to virtually live one street away from a beautiful yoga shala, so that's where I practice now. Mm. I'd practice daily if I could, but
so yoga's one of those things you can do on the road, right? In the hotel
Absolutely.
Room.
Absolutely. I was actually just saying yesterday that, you know, I don't enjoy doing a home practice, but now that I'm visiting Melbourne and visiting Sydney soon. So, and my yoga shala's closed over the Christmas break. So I did a bit of a home practice yesterday, which was fantastic, actually.
Bend and stretch, reach for the stars.
Absolutely.
Here comes Jupiter. There goes Mars.
So I will be doing a bit of yoga while I'm here in Melbourne.
Yes.
We'll be doing lots of sort of walking and lots of green juicing. And
you sound like the resolution show we've got coming up after Escape Pod on Fresh Air with Lauren, Anthony and Brian. They're going to be talking about their resolutions. I wonder if green
juice. I just think it's when you get old. Yeah.
It's fending off death.
I'm older now, Mark.
It's
I'm
fending
older.
Off death.
Not so much wiser, however older.
Oh, and
but I'm embracing it.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Emma, you're in Joy 94.9. This is Escape Pod. We're winding up our hour. Emma, former cabin crew, what are your number one tips as a traveller?
My number one tip is always...
Apart from eating boiled eggs.
Yeah, it's always don't do that before a flight. Don't do that before the long haul. My advice is, because I'm a frequent traveller, I love using the lounge, especially if you're doing like two long haul flights, to break that up, you know, so that you've got showering facilities. That is one of my big, you know, if you can afford the, you know, few hundred dollars, it's definitely worth it. Always travel with pajamas if you're not lucky enough to be in business class. Mm. I always change into very comfortable clothing so that I can, you know, sleep comfortably and feel just, you know, that little bit as fresh as possible after a 14 or 16 hour flight. And just the usuals, the hydration, stay hydrated.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, what are your next plans? What are you going to do?
Travel
plans.
Yeah. I actually don't have any at the moment.
You go to Sydney.
We did discuss that we would be doing France again at the same time, as, you know, because I can incorporate my business, and I didn't get to see the south of France. So, we're hoping that we can get that happening.
Yep.
So August, September, again, a couple of weeks. And, yeah, just some time in Melbourne with my bestie and then some time in Sydney with some other besties.
Sounds so like just, a good way to start in slash year. Okay. Well, Emma, thank you very much for joining us on Escape Pod today. We really do appreciate you taking time out of your busy travel schedule.
The pleasure has been all mine. Trust me.
And wish you all the best for the new year.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.